Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 356. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, you ready to break down the first base position today?
I don't know. I was going through the names, and it's I was kind of disappointed in just looking at the rankings. I'm like, ooh, like I don't love this at all. You got a top tier, but then it's kind of like after that, I don't know. It's just a bunch of guys. So, yeah, I mean, ready to get through it so we can get to better positions for sure.
Yeah, it's like after, I mean, there's obviously some great names at the top. Then you get to like into the teens, and there's still some decent names in there, some prospects mixed in, which we obviously won't be diving into, you know, the Kurtzes of the world and the Caglions of the world, etc., because we already talked about them on the prospect episode, episode 355. If you missed that, go back and check that out. But yeah, it's kind of just a bunch of bland players for the most part. Some intrigue, sure, but very top heavy for sure. The top like 9 or 10, 11, you know, it's pretty good though. Top 5 are all, you know, top 50 guys. So this isn't a bad position, but yeah, definitely kind of thins out a little bit once you get further down the rankings. But before we get into all of the first base goodness, let's go over the usual housekeeping real quick. You can find us on Twitter and Blue Sky. Chris is at Chris Clegg MILB on Twitter and at Chris Clegg on Blue Sky. I am at Eric Cross MLB on both. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, DynastyDugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. All of our Dynasty Prospect FYPD rankings live over there, plus a lot more. And make sure to check out all the great content over on Rotoballer. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout to get 10% off any premium package over at Rotoballer.com. And baseball, we were still doing plenty of baseball, and it's really starting to ramp up now. So plenty of baseball to get you through as we get closer and closer to the heart of draft season and opening day, which is now about 3 months and a week. So what's that, like 13 weeks, 14 weeks, something like that away from opening day? We're getting there. But luckily, these episodes are always fun. This whole series is always fun, and it helps us get through the kind of the dog days of December and January as we get into, you know, the more fun months of February and March as pitchers and catchers report. But first base today to wrap up the first base week. Prospects already done, going to the dynasty side today. And we will start out, as we always do, with our top 10 personal rankings at this position. Chris, who you got?
All right, I got Vladdy at the one spot, followed by Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson, Pete Alonso, and 6 through 10 being Josh Naylor, Tristan Casas, Vinny Pasquantino, Samuel Basayo, who we also talked about in the catcher episode, and Cody Bellinger at 10.
I also have Vladdy and Bryce Harper 1-2, though I think they're actually back-to-back in my overall, but I had to give the nod to Vladdy there. He's about 4.5. No, excuse me, 6.5 years younger. So kind of had to. I love Harper. Everyone knows I've been a big Harper guy for a while. I love the guy. But so Vladdy and Harper 1-2. Olsen, Freeman. So I have them flip-flop from Chris. I have Olsen 3, Freddie Freeman 4, Pete Alonso 5, Tristan Casas 6, Josh Naylor 7, Spencer Steer at 8, Vinny P 9, and also have Cody Bellinger at number 10. And let's start right there with Mr. Cody Bellinger. Actually, you know, a few of these first basemen have kind of switched teams over the last week or so, including Bellinger now with the New York Yankees. And obviously, you know, the first thing everyone thinks about when an intriguing lefty with any sort of power that goes to Yankee Stadium, you know, what could that look like? You know, obviously, Bellinger has been kind of all over the place. Remember, I put out a post about, I think, a month ago or so, highlighting that his OPS has had at least 110 points swing one way or another every season. This is massive. Even the last 3 years, 654, 881, 751 OPS. So it's kind of hard to figure out what you're going to get from Bellinger year in, year out. But the one area he has been consistent is he's been right around like 550, 560 plate appearances each of the last 3 years. You kind of got to wonder, you know, if he can at least push 600 plate appearances, can he get back to that 30 homer, you know, mark? I mean, he had 39 in 2017, rookie year, 47 in 2019. I don't think anyone is expecting him to get back to that level, but he hasn't. He's only had one other season since then above 20. Had 18 last year in 130 games. Chris, do you think he can get back up to, you know, at least pushing 30 home runs next year? You think it's a nice little value boost, him and the Yankees lineup in ballpark now?
I don't know if he gets to 30, but I think that 25 is certainly attainable. It's an interesting profile with Bellinger. Everybody always points to the poor Statcast data, but it's kind of always been the case for Bellinger. He's never really hit the ball all that hard. Like, you would have to go back to, I think, 2019 for him to, like, actually have, you know, decent looking exit velocities, and they've kind of regressed and kind of been steadily not great since then. So yeah, I mean, obviously this past year the numbers, you know, they weren't great. 18 homers. He had 569 plate appearances. I think that the park does benefit him. You know, it's definitely a good ballpark to hit in for lefties that can get to the poolside, and Bellinger can absolutely do that. So, you know, that helps his case. How many home runs does he hit? You know, 22 to 25. Seems pretty reasonable to me. You never know what you're going to get batting average-wise. He's fluctuated all over the board. But you look, at least the last 2 years, he's at 307. He's at 266. So, you know, probably something in that range is what you can expect. It's just weird to kind of look and see, you know, how his profile's just fluctuated so much year over year. But since their last 2 years, since 2023, the contact rates have been significantly better. Like, the last 2 years have been his best two end zone contact rate seasons. The overall contact rates the last 2 years have also been his two best at any point in his career. So, you know, those things are encouraging to see, at least. He's aggressive. Like, he's gotten more aggressive kind of throughout his career, which is interesting to look at. So how aggressive is he going to be in Yankee Stadium? Can he handle the New York media? I mean, he's played for big teams before. Like, this shouldn't be a huge thing for him going to New York. But, you know, I do think that he has plenty of value still to provide in the profile. The other thing is, like, how much first base does he play? He's probably going to play outfield majority of the time. He may not be first base eligible in some leagues, but for most of your leagues, he probably will be. If he's not currently first base eligible, I'm not sure he gains it. But, you know, crazier things have happened. We don't know. You know, he may need to fill in a pinch for an injury or whatnot. The versatility is nice, but I think he's likely going to play in center field most of his games. So if he doesn't have first base in your league, I probably wouldn't count on him getting it. So just kind of a caveat there is this is the first base episode, you know, that he may not have it in your league and he may not get it.
Yeah. I still think they go out and get a first baseman. I see them, you know, they've been rumored on a lot of guys from Alonso to Walker and others. So I do think they go out and get another first baseman. And yeah, he plays primarily out in the outfield and in center field. But yeah, Bellinger, I've always been I've never been a Bellinger guy. Even when he was, you know, at the peak of his powers early in his career, you know, pre-pandemic, I still was never as high as most on Bellinger. But I think he can be a back end. I mean, we both have him ranked 10th, so I think he can be like a back end starter if he's eligible at this position for you. So I do think we can see him get back into the mid 20s for home runs. I mean, he's always had that, you know, solid pull profile. He elevates. He's never had, actually, last time he had a ground ball rate above 40% was way back in 2018. And yeah, that's something I wanted to mention, what Chris alluded to, is, you know, the fact that he's had the best contact and zone contact rates of his career the last 2 years. Kind of a trade-off. He's also had the lowest barrel rates, EVs, and hard hit rates the last 2 years as well, but also the two best strikeout rates. So it's like he's, you know, kind of cutting back on the power a little bit, which is, you know, which is fine. And definitely had a nice little trade-off there, making more contact. So, I mean, that helps him from not having to hit 210 again like he did back in 2022. So I also don't think he's going to hit 307 again as he did in 2023. You know, last year's slash line, I mean, I think it's pretty fair. You know, 266, 325, 426. Maybe you see the OBP and slug tick up a little bit. You know, up to like 335 and maybe like 440 or something like that. You know, get up in the 22, 23, 24 home runs. You know, he's always run a little bit too. You know, 9 steals last year, 20 and 14 the previous 2 years before that. So I think he'll still give you right in the vicinity of 10 to 12 steals. So maybe a 25-10, 25-12 season could be there with, you know, 80-plus runs. So, yeah, I think he's a solid investment. I mean, I'm not going to run out and get him because I'm just never been overly enthralled to have Bellinger on my team. But I definitely see the intrigue, and I like the move here to Yankee Stadium, which ranked, I think, was third for left-handed power, and Wrigley Field was 23rd. So nice little bump there for Mr. Cody Bellinger. But let's go kind of up the rankings a little bit here. Not into the top five, but the guys that we had, 6 and 7, flip-flopped. I had Cassis 6, Naylor 7. Chris had Naylor 7, or 6, Cassis 7. Chris, do you think either one of these two can break into that top five? Because that top five has been pretty chalk the last few years, at least. There hasn't been a lot of, you know, movement into or out of that top five. You know, Alonso's had a little bit of fluctuation, but he's kind of still represents the top end of, like, the elite, or the back end, excuse me, of the elite options at this position. So can you, you know, see a future where, whether it's this year, next year, or whatever, where, you know, either Naylor or Cassis or maybe someone else kind of gets up into that elite top five?
I mean, somebody's going to have to. I would think that, you know, Freeman probably takes a step back eventually. He's been as steady as they come, but, you know, he's 35 and he's not been free of injury. You know, he's certainly dealt with his share of injuries recently. And despite that, you know, he still put up really good performance and was still on the field. So, yeah, I think that Freeman continues to perform for a while, but it's kind of, I guess, bold for me to still have him this high, but the consistency's been good. You know, Alonso's another interesting case. Like, where does he land? How does he fit in the new ballpark? He's been pretty steady every year, but he did turn in one of his worst seasons of his career last year, despite showing improved contact rates. He had just 34 home runs, which, just 34, you know, that was down from previous seasons. He averaged north of 40 every year of his career, outside the COVID year. Obviously, he was pacing for 40, but, you know, he's been a consistent power threat. And I think that it would take a lot for Cassis to pass him, even though Cassis has that kind of power. You know, Olsen's kind of the wild card, I guess. You know, what does his season look like in 2025? Personally, like, I think he rebounds in a big way. The whole Braves lineup was down last year, still hit 29. He had a good end to the season. I'm personally just not all that high on Tristan Casas. I think it's despite having him seven, it just kind of shows the depth of the position where, you know, I think the profile is fine. He's yet to show he can make consistent enough contact. He's really only had two good months of an MLB career to this point. Yeah, the power's fun. Like, I think you can dream on that, but like, how much contact is he making? Can he strike out? Can he not strike out? Or can he put his strikeout rates at a level where it's, you know, at a decent point to hit for average? I don't know. It's a weird profile with him, and there's certainly flaws. Naylor's interesting. I think we see definitely a step back for Naylor in 2025. He had a great year. He had 31 homers. Huge outlier, though, and I'm not sure the EVs and barrel rates kind of support him doing that again. So I'll kind of be curious to see how this all shakes out. But after that top five, it gets dicey really quick for me.
Yeah, it does. You know, I like Naylor and Casas a good bit, and they're kind of in the tier by themselves for me and my overall. I do think both could. I would give a higher percentage chance to Cass. I think you could say Naylor's a bit safer. He's, you know, got the higher floor. He's got better contact skills. I mean, Naylor's contact skills have actually been pretty solid. You know, they dipped a little bit last year, but still above average and higher than Cass's contact rates. But you know, I think you say that Casas has more upside. The ceiling's higher with Casas. I mean, you know, Chris mentioned the good, you know, good 2 months, and that was really the second half of 2023 where he was actually, you know, I think he had the fourth highest WOBA and WRC plus in baseball, only behind it was Shohei, Matt Olson, and I believe Mookie Betts, and he was just in front of Ronald Acuna Jr. during his 41-74 year. And obviously, those aren't fantasy stats, but you know, he was absolutely beastly to last, you know, the last couple months of 2023. And you know, he still had 13 home runs last year and 243 plate appearances, but that rib injury really derailed him. I think Casas could get, like, into Pete Alonso range. I mean, I could see a future where they're kind of similar values. And, you know, maybe, you know, Casas is like a 260 guy with 35 home runs or so and plenty of RBI in that Red Sox lineup. So I could see that, but yeah, there's definitely some warts here in the profile. You want to see that K rate back down, though. He never really had, you know, a ton of issues with the K rate. You know, even through his first 2 years in the majors, he was in that 24-25% range. So I think he can get back down there. He's never had an issue with strikeouts in the minor league. So I'm not really worried about that 31% K rate. Yes, it needs to come back down. I'm hoping, you know, a fully healthy Casas, you know, coming back in 2025, that'll help him just kind of get back on track. But want to see those contact rates at least, you know, at least get that zone back up and at least sniff an 80% overall, at least back up over 70%. I think he can get in that 260 range overall for the batting average with a good OBP as well. He's always been a high walk rate guy, 14.2% for his career so far in the majors. So, yeah, definitely a lot like there. A couple of things to work on. But I think he could get in that Alonso range. Naylor, yeah, he's interesting because it's like he went from 20 home runs, 17, up to 31. You know, though both of those previous 2 years were in just under 500 plate appearances each season. Quality of contact has been pretty steady, you know, 8.5% barrel, right on 89, 90 mile an hour average EV. Hard hit rate in the low 40 to, you know, 42% range. So he's got solid contact metrics, above average zone, above average overall, doesn't strike out much at all. He's been under 17% each of the last 3 years. So, you know, do I think he's at 31 again? Probably not, but maybe, you know, maybe 25 homer season or something like that. I do think the 243 average is going to go back up, though. The average has fluctuated pretty hard the last three seasons. Do I think he's 308 again? Probably not, but I think that could tick up to like 270 range or so. So I guess overall, I can see Naylor's value staying pretty similar. Take away some home runs, give him back some average, a little bit of OBP. I think overall, he probably stays in this range. So if I had to say one to move up, I would go with Tristan Casas, with Naylor kind of staying in that tier. But another one that's kind of in this tier, or maybe in the next tier, a little bit lower, Vinny Pasquantino. You know, everyone loves Vinny Pasquantino. Got the nickname. He's shown, you know, flashes of, you know, being a, you know, even higher ranked first baseman than he is now, but it always seems to, you know, he's missed time each of the last 2 years. the last year, you got in the 554 plate appearances, you know, better than the 260 of the previous year, but he still is kind of – I feel like we're always still waiting for more from Vinny P. I mean, last year he was fine, 262, 315, 446, 19 home runs in 554 plate appearances. I think we could still see more because, you know, everything is still there. All the metrics under the hood are pretty good. You looked at, you know, maybe he doesn't have the highest barrel rate. That's kind of around 7%. But strikeout rate's been below 13% every year, though the walk rate has dipped each of the last 2 years from his rookie year. But average EV, 91 miles an hour. Hard hit rate, 46.5%. His zone contact is over 90%. Overall contact, over 86%. So there's still a lot to like here with Vinny P. With the surface stats haven't kind of matched up what you thought they could be given the metrics he has under the hood. So I still think that the best is yet to come for Vinny P. I mean, that's easy to say. He's already been in the league 3 years. But if he can stay healthy and give you 650 plate appearances, I think you could see, you know, 270, 275, decent OBP, and probably 25 home runs or so. And that Kansas City lineup, you know, they added India to it, you know, good OBP guy. Obviously, you got Bobby Witt Jr. there, Salvi Perez. So that's a pretty solid, you know, pretty good top half of that order, at least. So, assuming he can stay healthy, I think we're looking at a career year for Vinny P. Maybe not pushing him to elite levels, but I think you can see Vinny P's rank, you know, move up a couple spots here at this position, and then, you know, 20, 30 spots overall. What do you think on Vinny P, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly somebody that we just keep waiting on, and it's an interesting profile because the overall stats haven't really reflected what the underlying data kind of suggests he could be. The barrel rate's obviously an issue. It stems from his just kind of poor launch angles, doesn't hit the ball consistent launch angles at all, and that's an issue. I mean, you look, his pop-up rate's well above MLB average. It's not a ground ball issue either. It's just not healthy fly balls and line drives that leave the park. So low sweet spot rate, low barrel rate, but he's interesting because he mashes fastballs and he handles all pitch types pretty well. Like, he's a pure hitter. Like, as pure of a hitter as you're going to find at this position, I think. Like you mentioned, the contact rates have been good year over year. His zone contact rate every year of his career has been above 90%, and that's super encouraging. I mean, he's got a career 85% overall contact rate, which is awesome to see. His profile has kind of flipped in the sense that he has gotten more aggressive. Not a bad thing. Chases more. OBP not as high as we kind of expected it to be at one point. But yeah, I mean, Vinny's an interesting profile. I think that at some point he's going to click and he's going to put it all together. Maybe it's 2025. Hopefully that's the case, as that lineup is getting better, as you mentioned. But yeah, I think Vinny's one that I think has that potential to take a solid step forward. So I'm hopeful it's this year.
Yes. Yeah, me too. I guess some Vinny P shares. So definitely hoping that he takes that nice step forward this year and has the best year of his career so far. Before we get out of the top 10, though, obviously we have to dive in a little bit to Vladdy Jr. here, coming off a very, very good year. I mean, kind of in a, not an up and down career. He's been obviously very good throughout his career, but the average has kind of been, you know, fluctuated a bit. You got 4 years from Vladdy hitting in like that 260, 270 or so range. And then the 2 years, you know, this huge year from 2021 when he had those 48 home runs. He hit 311 that year, and then 323 this past year. You know, he's been kind of settled in like the, you know, around 30 home runs at 30 on the dot this past year. So when the rest of that Toronto lineup was sputtering, including Bo Bichette especially, you know, Vladdy was, you know, vaulting up rankings and having, you know, maybe the best overall year he's had outside of that massive 2021 season. So, Chris, you know, the metrics, you know, didn't really jump up. You know, like zone contact was pretty in line with previous years. Overall contact did go up a little bit. He's always hit the ball hard. No real big changes there. So, you know, do you think this, you know, 2024 version of Vladdy can stick where he's, you know, hitting over 300, pushing a 400 OBP? I mean, he had the best walk rate of his career outside of that 2021 year this past year. So that helped get that OBP up from the 340-ish range up to almost 400 this past year. So you think that, you know, 2024 Vladdy is here to stay and he's cemented himself as the number one guy until someone else comes up and takes it from him?
Yeah, I mean, even with some natural regression, I think it's hard to say that anybody passes Vlad Guerrero Jr. for the number one spot here. I mean, obviously, he had a tremendous year this year. I still think there's flaws in the profile when it comes to ground balls.
Yep.
He does make up for it, though, just with how hard he hits the ball. I mean, not always a bad thing to hit ground balls. It does limit the home run output. But given Vladdy's, you know, metrics across the board, like, you look at this profile and you think he should probably hit more than 30 in 700 plate appearances. Like, just, I mean, everything is elite. So, you know, are there better days ahead? Like, is he going to hit more than 30? Sure, he's going to have seasons where he does. I mean, we know he obviously has. You know, the 2021 season, he played in different ballparks, minor league ballparks, etc. But I will say that, you know, Vladdy hits the ball as hard as anybody in the game. He makes things happen. His barrel rate's still really good despite the ground balls. I think if you looked at barrel rate and you compared to ground balls, I would bet nobody's close to him in terms of having a barrel rate near 14% while also having a ground ball rate near 48%. So, interestingly enough, the ground ball rate was up from 2023, and the good news was he hit more line drives, less pop-ups. So, you know, more of his fly balls were healthy fly balls versus pop-ups. So that obviously helps a lot. You know, it's still an interesting profile because he doesn't pull the ball all that much. Like, he pulled the ball at a career low 33.6% this year. That's well below MLB average. So good news is he makes it work. He's coming off a year with an elite barrel rate. I think even if he hits 295 next year, he'll still probably hit 30 home runs. I have a hard time seeing any of these names jump ahead of him. So I think it would take a lot. And you just given Harper's age, like Harper's second, Harper's close for me, but Harper's age, I mean, there's a big age gap there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Vladdy sticks in the one spot for probably the foreseeable future.
Yeah. So you look at the other options, and yeah, I love Harper too, but as I mentioned earlier, he's 6 years older than Vladdy. He's now 32. Is he 33 now? No, I think he's a year younger than Freeman. You know, Harper's getting up there a little bit. I mean, Olsen could have another year above Vladdy. I could see that. But can he be consistently ahead of Vladdy? You know, probably not. And he's also several years older than Vladdy. You know, Alonso, again, he's had, you know, he can have big peaks and valleys depending on where his average is. But I don't think he's going to be consistently ahead of Vladdy. And then you drop down to that Cassis Naylor range. So, yeah, and Freeman, obviously, but Freeman's now 34. Love Freeman, maybe the most consistent elite bat we've seen over the last decade or so. A guy that I would have loved to have had more shares of over the years than I did. But, yeah, I don't think anyone's going to, you know, take that spot and keep that spot and overtake Vlad. So, yeah, I think he's the number one here for the foreseeable future. See if any of the young guns can get up there in a few years. We shall see. But, all right, let's move out of our top 10 into the rest of our top 25. But to recap quickly before we do, Chris had Vlad Jr., Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson, Pete Alonso at 5, Josh Naylor, Tristan Cassis, Vinny Pasquantino, Sammy Basayo, Cody Bellinger in his top 10. I had Vlad Jr., Bryce Harper, Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, Pete Alonso at 5, Tristan Cassis, Josh Naylor, Spencer Steer, Vinny P, and Cody Bellinger at 10. My 11 through 25. 11 through 15 is Jake Berger, Samuel Basayo, Alec Bohm, Bryce Eldridge, Christian Walker. 16 through 20, Michael Busch, Nick Kurtz, Kyle Manzardo, Nathaniel Lowe, and Luis Arraez. And then we got 21 through 25, Yandy Diaz, Spencer Torkelson, Christian Encarnacion-Strand, Jose Miranda, and Xavier Isaac. That's quite the final four names there for sure, which kind of goes to what, you know, we've been saying a lot in this episode, that this position kind of gets, I mean, again, intrigue there for sure. There's some names that have been fun names, but yeah, there's a lot of question marks in the back half of these rankings as well. So, Chris, who are your 11 through 25?
All right, yeah, I've got Spencer Steer, Christian Walker, Nick Kurtz, Jake Berger, and Jack Caglione. So getting some prospects there. 16 through 20 would be Alec Bohm. He's another kind of fringy one. He may not be eligible in some leagues. Michael Busch, Bryce Eldridge, Kyle Manzardo, and Sal Perez, who is really good year over year. Just ageless wonder there with Sal Perez.
Yep.
And 21 through 25, we've got Yandy Diaz, Tyler Soderstrom, Jake Cronenworth, Nolan Chanuel, and Michael Tolia. Caveat, Isak Paredes might be eligible in your league, might not. He would be shadow kind of 21 there if he is eligible in your league. But I mean, he's more of a third baseman. We're going to hit on him in that third base episode, especially after the trade.
Yeah, for sure. I think he was going to be right around the last few spots of these. You know, he had moved out of that top 25. Everyone knows I've never been high on him, but the landing spot's good, so I think I moved him back up in. It was either into the top 25 or just outside of it. Definitely in that general vicinity. But yeah, we will definitely hit on him in the third base episode. One player that I wanted to discuss was, you know, I think he's intriguing. Spencer Steer, you know, one that is, you know, when he's dual eligible guys, probably going to play more so in the outfield, so maybe he loses that eligibility this year. But Steer's had two pretty good years, and I just don't think it's as much love as he maybe should, because he's got, you know, more fun players on that team, especially Ellie De La Cruz. But went 23-15 with a .271 average in 2023. 2025 last year. I mean, who would have thought Spencer Steer would go 2025? I sure didn't. And I always kind of liked him as a prospect a little bit. Never thought he'd do this. And I don't think he's going to hit 20, you know, I mean, steal 25 bags again. But you know, he had a really bad stretch of the season late that really, you know, made that average drop considerably and down to 225. And yeah, I think it's opened up a little bit of a buying opportunity because, you know, you look at the metrics under the hood. He was 86.5% in zone, 77% overall. He's above average contact. He just got had a really unlucky stretch there. I'm trying to pull up his FanGraphs page. I think that BABIP was really low, especially during that time frame where he was struggling. But yeah, the BABIP overall was 260. So that definitely, you know, should be going back up. It was 318 the year before that. Yeah, I think he's more in that 260, 270 range. The Steamer has him at 19 home runs, 15 steals. Yeah, I think he can get over 20 again. They haven't hit 244. I think he's capable of more than that. So, you know, I had him just inside my top 10. Nice dual eligibility right now. We'll see how long he keeps it. But I think Steer could be just a sneaky buy because I think that tough end of the season, you know, making that average crater a bit, maybe open up a little bit of an opportunity to buy. So, Chris, you know, what are your thoughts here on Spencer Steer?
Yeah, you know, the stolen bases, I think, were kind of the surprise. Obviously, we knew that he stole 15 the year before, but 25, even in this environment, that was a nice win for Steer last year. Does he run that much in 2025? The reason that I think that he could continue to run that much is because the lineup is not good, and they need to manufacture runs.
That's true, yeah.
So he may have more green lights. We know Ellie pretty much has the green light whenever. So Steer will be interesting to kind of see, like, where does he slot in the lineup for one, and will he steal bases? And I don't know. I would not expect 25 again. I'd probably expect below 20. But, I mean, two straight seasons with 20 home runs and, you know, Arm Layton's kind of coined the term outslug the EVs, and that's what Spencer Steer does. Like, you look at the barrel rate, not great. The hard hit rate, average EV, not great. And really, even the launch angles aren't that good. Like, the sweet spot rate is not where you want to see it. But he has the benefit of playing in a really good park, which does help him out a lot. Great American Ballpark is super hitter friendly. You know, I don't love the Savant, like, expected home runs. It doesn't paint a great picture, but
no.
Almost every park he is much lower if he played all his games there. So, I mean, that is just kind of to show you, like, I think most Reds hitters would fall in that bucket. So, you know, if he had played all his games in Great American, it says 25 home runs, and that's, you know, much higher than any park, but surprisingly Citizens Bank in Philadelphia. So, you know, I do think this Steer continues to perform. While I'm not, like, you know, overly high on him, I still think the profile's fine, and he's going to make it work. So I think the projections are probably pretty close. You know, Steamer 19-15, the average maybe a little low at 244, but again, like, we're not talking like a super high in contact profile either. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I think he does hit above 250 this year. I will say that. and he's going to have respectable OBPs. So, I mean, Steer's fine by, like, if you miss some of the guys at the top, like in a redraft, or you're looking for somebody to kind of help you out at first base, like, he's probably that guy. So, you know, it won't cost you a ton. I'd take the chances there.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree with that. Let's go over to Jake Berger now a member of the Texas Rangers, coming over from the Miami Marlins, and a kind of an odd deal for Miami, but, you know, they do odd things, so shouldn't be too surprised. But I like this move, Chris, for Jake Berger. I mean, does he have his flaws? Absolutely. But, you know, he's a, you know, big-time power bat, 63 home runs combined the last 2 years, been very Chris Davis, Chris with a K, Davis-esque with his batting average lately, 250 each the last 3 years. So he's been very steady there. And I love this move, just, you know, better ballpark, better lineup, much, much better lineup around him. You know, you look at just the ballpark factors for right-handed power. Let's see, where was Globe Life was fourth in right-handed power behind Dodger Stadium, Yankee Stadium, and Great American Ballpark, and Lone Depot Park now. Lone Depot Park, whatever you want to call it these days, was the sixth lowest for right-handed power. And I don't think it's going to really change Berger's power too much. You know, he's, you know, got what I like to call big boy power. Everyone knows I love that saying. So I don't think it's going to, you know, add 10 home runs or anything, but, you know, can't ever hurt going into a better hitter's park. And just, like I said, the better lineup around him. Is that Miami lineup? It was pretty, you know, lackluster, and that's putting it nicely. And now he's got, you know, guys like Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, Wyatt Langford. It's a much better lineup overall around him. So you can see some, you know, additional runs in RBI, you know, and maybe even the career high home runs. Maybe he's up 35, 36 this year. So I think that was a nice move for Jake Berger, and they'll see what they have him hitting. Even if he hits seventh, that's where Rossi Rufus has him. I think you can see him tick up, you know, a little bit, maybe hit fifth or sixth. They currently have Lowe and Josh Young in that spot. So, yeah, love the move here for Jake Berger.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly get a much better lineup context, which is nice. You know, Berger, I think he's kind of underappreciated. He's about as steady as they come year over year. I mean, he's the new Chris Davis, 250 every year, batting average. He's going to give you home runs, and homers were down a little bit early in the season. He really caught back up like July moving forward. I think that even included a pretty poor September for Berger. But yeah, I mean, everything's there for him to be successful in that lineup. I guess my biggest question is, where does he hit in the lineup? And if he goes towards the bottom, like if he hits seventh, then, you know, how does that affect his plate appearances? You know, right now, like, I'm not sure we know exactly where he's going to hit, how he's going to fit in that lineup. But, you know, I do think that given the lineup context, like, it's not crazy to think that he could hit towards the bottom. And I think that would probably be my biggest concern if we saw the plate appearances kind of tick backwards. But still, the power's there. Berger showed some improvements in his contact rates last year. He's a chase-happy, aggressive kind of profile, but you know what you're going to get out of him. You're going to get plenty of power. You're going to get home runs. And I don't think the move to Texas really affects him at all. Like, I think, you know, everybody looks at, you know, the park factors. They're wondering how it'll play. Personally, like, a guy with this kind of power, I don't think it matters all that much. I think that there's just so much more to park factors than that. And, you know, maybe Savant suggests that he would have had less home runs in Texas in Globe Life, but I think he still hits 30. Like, the kind of power that a park doesn't really affect, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I'm certainly in on Jake Berger. I think you know what you're getting out of him. Like, he's going to be that consistent guy. Maybe he gives you some more run and RBI opportunities, though, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is just the lineup around him. Is it, even if he hits seventh, I mean, that bottom third isn't going to be terrible. You know, Jonah Heim's down there. Evan Carter, maybe, if his back's okay. But that's still a, you know, better bottom three, four, five hitters in the lineup than most teams. So, yeah, I definitely love the just the lineup and ballpark context definitely a nice little boost there for Jake Berger. Just hope he's a little bit more consistent than he was last year. But another younger player. How old is Berger? Oh, Berger's 28, yeah. So a couple years younger, Kyle Manzardo. He made his debut last year with the Cleveland Guardians. 234, 282, 421 slash line, 5 home runs, and 156 plate appearances. Well, you know, solid quality of contact in that debut. 9.5% barrel, 89.1 average exit velocity, 40% hard hit rate. You know, contact rates were just a tick below average, but not bad. Though the walk rate, not what we came to know from Manzardo in the minor leagues, only 5.8%. Now, Manzardo, Chris, obviously, we've been talking about him for a while on this podcast, coming up through the prospect ranks, and really had a huge kind of peak where he was a top 10 prospect. Then people kind of cooled on him a bit. Now I kind of see evaluations and rankings for him, kind of all over the place. So, what are you expecting Kyle Manzardo to be, long term? How impactful do you think he's going to be for fantasy moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and it's obviously the million-dollar question that we all want to answer. And, I do think that Manzardo showed some flashes last year where it's like, okay, like we can see what we're hoping to get out of him. Obviously, AAA numbers looked good. They should. Yeah, I mean, I hope that we'll see him get regular plate appearances in the majors. I think that would be a big step, He did hit 5 home runs in the majors. He showed some inconsistencies with some underlying data. It wasn't a huge sample, though, which I do think is worth noting here. But you look under the hood, if we go back to the AAA data, I think Manzardo did a lot of good things. Obviously, as you'd expect, the EVs were above average. He had good launch angles. He had consistent contact, low chase. So, that's kind of what we've come to know for Kyle Manzardo. Now, what does he look like over a full season? I hope that we'll see him give you 20 home runs with respectable average, because we know that he's capable of hitting for power but also making plenty of contact. So will we get that? Maybe, maybe not. I think his end of season was an encouraging sign, at least. He had a pretty good final month, and over the final 2 weeks, he had 3 home runs, and that was in the majors. So you look at that and you say, all right, maybe we've got something to build on here heading into 2025, and hopefully we'll see that. But I think that the biggest thing I want to see from Manzardo is just playing consistently in that Cleveland lineup, in hopes that the consistent reps against MLB pitching helps him get to the level he needs to be with the bat.
Yeah, and I think he might be getting those this year. I mean, we've seen some recent rumors that Seattle and Cleveland were talking about a trade involving Josh Naylor. So hopefully that can free up more time for Manzardo to be an everyday player. I mean, I don't know why they're looking to trade Naylor. He's obviously been a good hitter, and we talked about him. But, yeah, anything to get Manzardo some reps. Because I don't think Manzardo's going to be a star. I mean, I don't. I don't think he's ever going to even – probably not going to be a top 10 option at this position. But – could he, and this is not a direct comp, but could he maybe settle into the Alec Bohm area of just overall value? And when you're a solid, a good corner infield option, but no one ever really looks forward to having Alec Bohm as their starter, but could he just be just a good corner infield option, guy that can hit for a decent average? And maybe the average isn't going to be as high as what we once thought, but I do think it's going to be respectable. 260-ish range. I think he could be a guy that's around 20 home runs, low 20s. Maybe gets into the mid-20s, some years at peak. Probably never going to be a 30-plus homer guy, but never going to be a standout in any one area, but just a solid bat all around that can provide decent four-category production. That's kind of what I'm feeling with Manzardo. So I think now is a decent time to buy, as I think the perceived value has dropped a good bit. I think it's what have you done for me lately world. He hasn't done a whole heck of a lot lately, at least what we saw from him, a couple years ago. So I think, maybe you can get him for 90 cents on the dollar right now and still get a pretty decent player moving forward. He's still only 24 years old, so. All right, we end the show with our breakout picks, and this was a difficult position, I think, to make a breakout pick in, but we did come up with two names that have some intrigue here. So, Chris, who'd you end up going with?
Yeah, I can't say that it was an easy choice.
No, not at all.
Probably the harder of any of these, but I went with Tyler Soderstrom. He's interesting. I thought he made some kind of notable improvements last year. And while the surface numbers don't look all that great for Soderstrom, he did show improvements with contact. And I think that's really the biggest thing that I wanted to see from him. And at the major league level, he posted a near 85% in zone contact, which that's kind of encouraging from a player like him. He had really good power numbers, and he always has, but he barreled it up at a 15% clip, had a 50% hard hit rate, had 92-mile-an-hour average exit velocity, high-end bat speed as well. So Soderstrom is interesting because we also – there's another guy in here that we talked about last episode, Nick Kurtz, who's kind of breathing down his neck in a way, and it's like, okay, how much of a leash does Soderstrom actually have in this lineup? And – when will he no longer be a part of it? So I think that they can make this work with both of them if Soderstrom continues to hit. I don't think this is kind of profile where you just, like, you know, if he's hitting, yank the plug and say, sorry, you're sitting on the bench, kid. Like, Nick Kurtz is ready. You know, hopefully that's not the case. But, you know, I do think Soderstrom showed some good improvements in his time in the majors. You know, when he came back up towards the end of the season, he looked pretty good, in my opinion. It looked, you know, more than ready to kind of head into the 2025 season and hopefully show out. His projections are pretty wild this year. I think he's steamer projection for 24 homers, which is, you know, not shocking given the barrel rate, the exit velocity data, and all that. But, you know, the question, I guess, is still how much contact will he make and what kind of average does he hit for? I do think the contact improvements are extremely notable, and that's kind of what stands out to me. If I can get Roster Resource to load, I would kind of be curious to see. You know, obviously Soderstrom probably penciled in at first base, but at the, on the flip side, like, Kurtz is coming. I don't think he's catching anymore, and they've got a lot of bats that that can fit the DH role as well. So it'll be interesting to see how the playing time shakes out, but I am kind of in the Soderstrom breakout camp and just kind of see where it goes. I think the cost is cheap enough where you take a shot and you hope for the best. Like, with this crew at first base, like, gotta target some upside, and I think that this is like the deepest power upside you can find, where it's like, okay, maybe it makes sense to take a shot on him as a breakout.
Yeah, Roster Resource is running slower than Albert Pujols running third base right now. This is, I can't get anything to load right now. I don't know what's going on tonight, but I was trying to get the Athletics to load too. But yeah, I think Soderstrom probably plays, and you know, I've never been the highest on him, but you know, the metrics have been, you know, intriguing. That's for sure. So I'd be willing to take a shot on him just because the price tag is very, very cheap and or free, depending on your league depth. So definitely a good low-cost target there. Okay, it just loaded. Where do they have him? Yep, they have him at first base. So they have him hitting fifth, right behind. I mean, that's actually, you know, not a terrible, like, top half of the order. You got Butler, Rooker, Blade, and Langoliers, and then Soderstrom, five, Geloff, Brown, Wilson, and Hernandez. So not a terrible lineup, better than we thought Oakland, not Oakland, sorry, the Athletics would be. But my guy, I mean, again, these were not, it wasn't like there was a bunch of names that just kind of stood out here. So this guy, very, very flawed, but also very, very strong. So I'm going with Michael Taglia of the Colorado Rockies. You know, big 6'5", massive power. He's always shown that. Last year had 25 home runs in 450 plate appearances. Also stole 10 bags, too, which never thought I'd see Michael Taglia stealing 10 bags. But, hey, you know, it's 2024. Everyone's stealing bags these days. But you look at how elite the quality of contact was for Taglia last year. You're talking 17.3% barrel rate, 92.1 average EV, 50.2% hard hit rates. All of those were among the best of the best. In baseball, that barrel rate was 98th percentile. He also had a 93rd percentile X slug, sweet spot rate of 90 and the 91st percentile at 39.2% there, so among the elite leaders too. The power obviously is the big calling card here, and really the only calling card, because the average has never been good. I mean, His peak was actually last year at 218, only been in the league 3 years. But and that's probably always going to be on the lower end. Could it maybe get up, you know, 230? Sure. Because contact rates, you know, while they're below average, they're not like, you know, they're not like terrible. You know, he was 78% in zone, 65% overall. Yes, those are bad. Also strikes out too much, 32%. It's always been high, but the walk rate jumped up to near 12% last year. That's encouraging. So I'm never going to say he's even hit 240, 250, even in, you know, playing half his games at Coors Field with that BABIP boost that comes along with it. So maybe he gets 230, 235, something like that. But that could come, you know, a full year. I mean, even last year, he was on pace for, oh, that's probably what, like a 36, 37 home run pace. I mean, if you give him 400 and, I mean, another 200 plate appearances up to, you know, even like the 650 range, that puts him at, yeah, about 35, 36 home runs. You know, could he hit 40 this year, full-time gig? Yeah, I think he could. Again, the average won't be great. Maybe he still gives you another handful of steals, 80-plus runs. I mean, there's a path to some, you know, being him one of the biggest power bats in the game. If you can stomach the average, you know, having a guy like this, you know, people kind of shy away because of the average, but you can build around that. You absolutely can. So I'm not one to shy away too much from these guys, especially when they're still pretty cheap. Like, Talia's price tag is not high, and I don't really see anyone taking his spot. I mean, they haven't penciled in hitting fifth, you know, behind Doyle, Tovar, McMahon, and Chris Bryant. Let's see if Chris Bryant actually could play this year. You know, Nolan Jones has played some first, but he's probably going to play mostly in left. Their bench is Hunter Goodman, Kyle Farmer, Sean Bouchard, and Greg Jones. I don't know if any of those guys have ever even played first base. So, you know, there's no, like, big prospects waiting in the wings either. So, barring them going out and getting somebody, which obviously is pretty unlikely, I don't see any real threats to his play times, even if he is struggling. You know, just not having anybody else step in, they'll probably stay in the lineup more often than not. And again, I think 35, 40 home runs could be in the cards this year with, you know, 80 plus runs in RBI, 5 to 10 steals. Yeah, so he's still providing solid production there, and standing out in power kind of offsets the lower batting average there. So I guess just because this position's not the greatest in the back half, I will go with Michael Talia. So Soderstrom and Talia as our breakout picks. That will wrap up the first base dynasty episode and the first base week overall. You know, fun position, but I think we got some better positions upcoming. We got second base next week. Got one guest lined up for that, so that'll be a lot of fun. A lot of intriguing names at that position. So we will be back with you for second base next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.